What is the time?
I think it's
not so many people.
It will drive long-term rentals.
I'd like to call the House Committee on Agriculture and Land Use to order. Today is February 21st. Thank you, colleagues and guests. We've got two bills up today, and I don't have a jacket because I left it somewhere, and Representative Helm forgot to tell me I left it at the lunch meeting we were at.
Oh, I was.
That's where it is. Because you're supposed to pay attention to all the things I lose and let me know where I lost it. But that may show up. See, thank you for making me feel you're tieless and jacketless, and I feel much better. No, don't take your tie off. Let me open a public hearing on House Bill 2560 and ask Representative Evans to join us. Are you bringing Patrick with you, or is he just here to look shiny and new? Okay. Patrick's one of your constituents? Oh.
For the record, I'm Paul Evans. I represent House District 20, Monmouth Independence, West Salem, South Salem. If it would help, I'll take my tie and coat off.
No, because I'm going to get mine here in a minute, and then we'll put ours back on. But you can take your tie off later.
Do you want me to disrobe too?
No, we're okay. We're good.
Okay, so
I'm going to drink some chocolate milk while you talk, if you don't mind. It's Dairy Farmers Handing Out Cheese and Chocolate Milk Day.
Got it right here.
That's great.
That's what we do in this committee, by the way. Fluster the witnesses and see how they do.
You're so kind to bear with it.
All right. So let's begin with what's on the screen. House Bill 2560, as it stands right now, is a task force to look at something that is a growing problem in Oregon. And at first glance, we see these cell phone towers and other structures all the time. And again, it's become very common in today's modern world because as more people want more bandwidth, more and more of these structures go around. The problem, I think, is worth our attention because as I have spent the last year or so talking with constituents frustrated by these cell phone towers, there's a growing consensus that they're necessary. So this bill is not offered to try to make it harder to get cell towers put in place. But that, especially as we're putting so much money into tourism and changing the nature of bringing more and more guests into wine country where they actually produce the wines and they have that aesthetic value, that there needs to be a concerted effort and a standardized effort to try and mitigate the impacts on the visual pollution created by these structures. Upon research about this, I was quite frankly surprised to find out how much work has been done by the Bureau of Land Management and other entities that recognize that there is an aesthetic value that can be measured in economic terms. They actually have a different, BLM has, I understand, three or four different categories based on the critical nature of what they call the view shed. Now, I'm not an expert on this, but I did call some experts to ask for help, and the amendment that is in drafting right now reflects a baseline standardized approach. So what is before you is a task force to bring people together and have a conversation. If, however, this committee recognizes that this is, in fact, something that you want to tackle a little more robustly, there is an amendment in draft that would basically provide for several things. It would provide for a standardized approach. Counties would have the authority to implement, but a baseline expectation. It would set a date where mitigation efforts would need to be put in place, and it would provide an assistance program to help those structures that are already up to get mitigated. And it would give counties some enforcement authority to make sure that these things are taken seriously. As a believer in local government, I don't think we should simply have a state entity go out and try to implement it. But having statewide standards, whether they are a region specific in terms of different kinds and categories like BLM, or county specific, I think is certainly worth the effort. The one thing I do know is if you look at the one in the middle, unfortunately, some of these things haven't even had a thin coat of paint put on. And the issue is that I think we can do better. And I want to make sure that as we are spending precious dollars for economic development and tourism and getting people to enjoy what I believe is the prettiest state in the union, that we actually don't despoil that. And again, I want to emphasize, I'm not trying to stand in the way of technology. I am trying to say that we can have our visual commons and our commerce at the same time. So I'd like to close my prepared remarks.
Say cake and eat it too. That was complicated. I don't even know what those words mean.
So in trying to make sense of all this, I went back to a part of a poem by Wallace Stegner. And it's the last sentence that I think is the most important, but one cannot be pessimistic about the West. This is the native home of hope. When it fully learns cooperation, not rugged individualism, is the quality that most characterizes and preserves it, then it will have achieved itself and outlived its origins. Then it has a chance to create a society to match its scenery. The West has a scenery that promises the type of place where we can have your cake and eat it too, where we can have great vistas and vino, where we can actually have the ability for people to come in and enjoy without stepping on the ability of us to have access to data and pictures and all the things that we look at and need in the modern world. So I just I ask the committee for your consideration of this measure in whichever direction you'd like to go, provided you'd like to even advance it. I certainly stand ready to try to assist.
Questions for Representative Evans, Vice Chair Post.
Well, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Evans, I don't know if maybe your team that you have would be better to ask this to or not, but for instance, in Kaiser, there's at least two that I know of the towers where they've kind of made them into a tree.
Yes.
Sort of thing. Is that where we're kind of where you're trying to go?
So Chair Clem, Vice Chair Post, I actually don't want to be that prescriptive, but that would be the direction. I think that the standards that are actually in some counties and could be applied have options for either camouflaging. In some cases, there are some companies that camouflage them in such a bad way that they've actually been seen as the examples of what not to do.
Yeah.
But even paint sometimes, based on where the landscape is, a particular paint that basically subdues it as opposed to kind of that giant steel gleaming, glistening type of problem. So I think that, again, the amendments provide flexibility. The task force may even provide more time to find more options. But I don't want to necessarily say that everything has to look like a tree, because in some landscapes, a tree might not be the best way. But I think that that is the direction that we can go to. And the thing that I think is most important is the courts have been changing on this, from what I understand. When I was a mayor, there was an urge to try to get technology everywhere, it was very difficult to even put requirements on a placement. That's almost superseding authority. Now the courts have actually said, you know, aesthetics does have a role to play. And what I'd like to do is get to a place where, again, counties, based on what the landscape is in that county, can come up with two or three or four approaches, and we set a date that's in common, so everybody knows it's the same timeline that it starts, and an assistance program. Because again, I don't want to negatively impact the folks who have made those investments. I just think moving forward, we can do better.
My follow-up, Mr. Chair, would just be, have you heard anything, and I'm just pulling this out, because I swear I've read stories recently about there either may be, I don't know if there's going to be more or more complex would be the right combination of words on 5G. Have you heard about that? Do you know anything more about that?
Representative Clem, Chair Clem, and Vice Chair Post. Claire, yeah, okay. Two pieces to it. One is the 5G isn't necessarily 5G everywhere. It means different things depending on who's talking about it. That I have learned because of the broadband that's in our community. Yeah. The second piece is that even though wireless will continue to be more pronounced in our everyday life, there still needs to be that backbone of broadband that supports that. So what I'm trying to say is I think the future suggests that there will be all of the above, more facilities, more complex structures put on those structures, and probably the need for a more robust broadband to take all the data, because we're using an accelerating amount exponentially in terms of voice and data and streaming in ways that the original cell phone folks I don't think ever thought was going to be a problem.
Yeah. Thank you.
Representative Helm.
Thank you, Mr. Clare. Representative Evans, I don't want to put you on the spot here with the questions about federal preemption, but I ran into this in my past life as a land use hearings officer, and nothing can bring out folks from the woodwork like a proposed cell phone tower in our hinterlands, and the hearings officer never wins. Let me tell you that. And I noticed that you have help from DLCD. So my question is, I applaud this effort. I want to maybe to refresh my memory and maybe for the benefit of the committee today to understand what we think our current latitude is within the telecommunications law, because my memory is what your memory is of being mayor, which it was pretty darn hard to place conditions on these towers that made them more amenable, depending on what the applicant was willing to do, where you have a cooperative applicant that wants to make it look like a decent tree or otherwise you're in business. Others have no interest in what the impacts on the neighbors are.
So Chair Clem, Representative Helm, I need to emphasize that the LCDC has no position on this bill, which is different than neutral. I was instructed to remind people that it's no position. Having said that, I may or may not have asked for some help understanding the rules. And what I think is the truth is three things. Number one, the laws and the decisions in the courts on the impact on visual pollution is becoming that localities are having more play on that than before. Number two, the courts are pretty clear about placement. That can't be stopped because of only aesthetic value, but that there is a growing recognition that the visual spectrum is in fact a commons and has not an absolute right by the folks who own the property itself. And number three, that if there is a standardized approach, you will likely have a better time in court than if it's a one-off or two-off. And that's actually why I'm recommending a statewide standard that provides for local flexibility and tailoring, but is a general, consistent application of a law as opposed to a patchwork, which I think is, quite frankly, generally where the arbitrary capricious part comes in the way that they lose those cases.
You're a pretty clever fella, aren't you? I kind of like it. And we've got an amendment coming that we'll have a look at. And it's a tool for counties to opt into if they want to.
I think it's a statewide standard with the county having the authority to determine some of the local, for lack of a better term, local looks, local options, mm-hmm. and the county having the enforcement mechanism. So if the county not going to enforce it, the county's not going to enforce it.
Hmm. Okay. Oh, Representative Brock Smith.
You know, I would be remiss if my colleague reminded me that Representative Post did not bring up the emergency clause on this piece of legislation.
Well, holy cow, how'd I miss that?
That's what I just said. Did I miss when Bill asked if it was an actual emergency?
Are you going to amend that out?
Chair, Madam Vice Chair Post, if you would like that amended out, we will amend that out.
Oh.
It would help. Just help all of us, really.
They don't have to hear about it.
Exactly.
And again, the plan has always been to set a date in the future anyway for implementation. So this is consistent with our plan.
Okay.
Thank you, colleagues.
You're welcome,
I appreciate that.
Honorable colleague.
We're trainable, it turns out, after years. Especially anything else for Representative Evans?
No.
Okay.
Thank you for allowing this hearing.
Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2560 and open the public hearing on House Bill 2573 and ask Senator Roblin, Representative McEwen, and Commissioner Cribbins to come up and join us. Okay, so I went over to the coast this weekend and it was sunny, and there's one of you who looks like she's been in the sun and the other two look like you've been locked in the Capitol for a month. So what's going on?
Wasn't me.
It was like 50 and beautiful.
So cell phone tower.
And I had a friend from Asia visiting. I'm like, oh yeah, it's like this every day. It's just, this is exactly what I grew up in.
That's what I tell people too.
Yeah.
She would only have gotten it from Coos County.
Yeah. That's right. Definitely we have this code, then if you want to put it in.
Good for her.
I would love you to do it first.
Okay, tell us about Cranberry farms and high-value farmland.
Chair Clem, Vice Chairs McLean and Post, members of the committee. My name is Kathy McHugh, and I represent House District 9 down on the south coast, Coos Bay to Yahats, half of Charleston. And I am delighted to be before this committee today. I missed you all. I know we have a different committee structured this this session, but this is near and dear to my heart, so it's nice to be back just for a brief moment. I am here to support House Bill 2575. It was requested on behalf of our Coos County Commissioner, Melissa Cribbins, and I believe you are all three of your commissioners. Mm-hmm. And Melissa is going to testify on the details of the bill. But I come from a part of the coast where the cranberry industry has been iconic. The first cranberry bog was planted north of the bay probably 115 years ago. It's a very mature industry, and it's an old industry. And we appreciate everything that our farmers do down in Coos and Curry County around this really important industry. But they are struggling. We have some significant problems that are facing our cranberry growers. And many of you may know that when you get down on the south coast and you look at growing cranberries, it's a really different environment than the Willamette Valley, where you have rich loamy soils. It's a harsher environment. It has a little more sand, a little more clay, but it grows cranberries quite well. The problem is there are market issues around cranberries right now that are making it very, very difficult for some of our producers. And Commissioner Cribbins is here today to explain to you why she's bringing a bill that deals with the definition of high-value farmland, particularly around this industry. She's the perfect person to bring this bill. She's very well qualified to talk about land use issues. She's from this area and understands the industry, and I'm delighted that she was in a position to come up and represent our farmers today. So I'm going to jump out. I have to get back into another meeting right now and turn this over to Senator Roblin and our very capable commissioner, Mrs. Cribbins.
And thank you, Chair and Vice Chair and committee members. For the record, Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5, and I'm here representing Brock Smith's district, because that's where most of our cranberries are. It is an amazing thing, and I just want to talk a little bit about what Kathy started with, and that these are not great soils, but it is an amazing discovery that subductions and earthquakes raise up land. So much of, from Coos Bay all the way down through Curry, the highest parts of the land were the bottom of the ocean many, many eons ago. And every 10,000 years, 3,000 years, depending on how the earthquakes happened, silt would come down off of the ocean and fill up this big lagoon that used to be between almost Northern California and the ocean, and lay down a layer of silt and sand. But the first layer was usually a clay layer. And so then it got moved up, and then it got moved up. And if you get up on certain ridges, you can see this pattern just going down the coast of one after another. What it did, though, is it made these properties, these bogs, the ability to fill them with water, and the water didn't all drain through. It went down to the next layer of clay, and it stayed there, which gives you a way to grow cranberries and use the bog to harvest them. Another interesting thing is these people have a lot of ingenuity, and they realize that using water is not always a good thing, because water is a precious commodity. And so if you look at what the cranberry people have done in Coos County, and that they have built their farms and they plant and harvest down the hill. So the first one that's going to come ripe is on the top. They fill with water. They pump it through pipes to the next one that's lower after that one's harvested, all the way to the river. So the water is used over and over and over again in the process of harvesting these berries. So they've tried to be as efficient as they possibly can with all the resources they have, but the value of cranberries, and most of ours are owned by Ocean Spray. They like our berries because ours are bright red, give color to the juice. The ones in other places aren't as much, so they have to use a proportion of them. So it's a really unique industry, uniquely fit for the area it's in. But the values go up and down like almost all farm commodities, and what you end up with is people who have property, and like our milk industry right now, they pour the milk out because it costs more to produce it than to sell it. Cranberries are in that same position right now for a lot of these people. And so the ability to put a farmhouse on there and live and work at your same place becomes much more important for people. Even the conversion of some of that high-value fine land to forest land could be a much better thing for them in the long run. So what we're trying to do here is say this is not really a high-value crop. It is a great crop. We love cranberries, and every Christmas people buy a lot of them. And we've tried to show you that the antioxidants and the people standing out in the bogs make great commercials. But that being said, we want families and farmers to stay there for a long time, and that means they have to be able to do things like keeping the requirements for acreage and so on and so forth. We want them to be able to live on the same farm they're trying to work on. So we think this does that. I appreciate Melissa Cribbins. And if you need to get a hold of Melissa, you can come to my office. Her daughter is now working in my office as one of my assistants. So if you see Taylor, say hi. I always like to embarrass the families and Taylor. But again, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to this bill. And Melissa is the one that knows everything, and she's also the smartest group person so far up here. Caddy's pretty close, but Melissa's the one. We all accept that about
her. It's one of the reasons why I didn't decide to join you.
Call. Right.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Any questions I'd love to ask, so ask them. If you want to know about the cranberry industry, it's been fun to learn about. High school,
but yeah, that's all private. Student data records are private.
Yeah. We were talking about high school, but we'll see.
Yeah, we're not going to talk much about high school. Vice Chair McLean.
So this is a serious question. Does this bill mean that I won't get any cranberries from your area?
No,
it means that you will probably continue to get cranberries that come from there, because right now they're getting to the place where they may just have to sell their properties and not have cranberries, because the value of the crop they're doing does not pay for the property tax, all the other kind of stuff, and what we're doing. So, and they have to belong to a cooperative, basically, to make anything. The people who are independent outside of that, they're in real trouble right now. Because if you're part of the Ocean Spray, they guarantee they're going to get some of them, and you're going to get some money. If you're not in that Ocean Spray group, it's a lot harder. But so we will, there'll always be cranberries being grown down there. It's just how many and what, during market swings, what are we going to have to do?
Thank you. And before we have Commissioner Cribbins go into the details, we've done what we could have done to try to help with the commodity market. Back in 2014, we changed the phytosanitary certification rules so that we can have an expedited process to ship more to China, because they appreciate the color and the aesthetic color of our cranberries over the others. And we were successful there. But then Terminal 6 closed in Portland, and the added cost of transportation up to the Port of Tacoma to ship out, you're dealing with the prices there. And so 99% of the cranberries grown in Oregon are grown in my district. And that's why I appreciate the smartest people in the room on them down there, because the majority of them are actually grown in also Commissioner Cribbins' county. And she's been dealing with this within the farmers for quite some time, and it's necessary to get this bill passed. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Later, Councilor Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A comment and I guess a question, but I think the commissioner will probably answer it when she talks. I just wanted to point out, Senator Roblin, thank you for this, that you mentioned that farmers have ingenuity, that they are innovative, and they are efficient. And I just wanted to make sure that I captured that correctly.
Especially those that are related to people who are in Florence.
Right. I agree.
And those people in particular as farmers are exceptional.
Exceptional.
We're in District 1.
And Representative McEwen alluded to market issues. And are you going to speak to some of the market issues?
I will speak to
market
issues.
Okay. Yes.
But truly, farmers have always been ingenuine. They've never had a lot of resources, but they've used the resources they have exceptionally well. I actually went to a workshop in MIT, and there was a study being done about how did we get where we got to at the end of the Second World War with all the scientists that developed all this stuff. And this book was written, and they said that there wasn't a whole lot, they came from everywhere. But if there was one group that was more likely to be there than anybody else, it was a farmer's kid who grew up on the farm, had a mother who was a teacher, and a dad that made him figure out how to use baling wire or whatever to fix whatever equipment they needed to fix. And they went on to change the world. And it was because mom said, get an education, you won't have to be here any longer. And dad said, I don't care if you're going to be here any longer. Right now, you can go up and fix that piece of equipment. So they learned how to use both their intelligence and their abilities to make things work to change the world. So add that to your concern about farmers.
Okay, Commissioner Kerwitz.
Thank you again. Thank you very much, Chair Klim, members of the committee. My name is Melissa Cribbins, and I'm a Coos County Commissioner. The majority of the cranberries that are grown in Oregon are grown in Coos and Curry counties. There are actually a few bogs in Clatsop County also, but because of the way that Clatsop zones their bogs, they don't fall under this issue. They're all in wetlands. We have about 150 family cranberry farms in Coos and Curry County. In 2016, Oregon produced 394,000 barrels of cranberries on 2,800 acres with a production value of $10.4 million. That was a big drop over the previous year and a big drop over 10 years before that when Oregon's cranberry industry was valued at $36 million. The cranberry market has been hit hard by many things. You might have read last November that the USDA authorized destruction of 25% of the crop because there was such a glut of cranberries on the market. Oregon is, in fact, the fourth largest producer of cranberries in the United States. Even with solutions like helping with being able to export them to China, the Chinese increased the tariffs on cranberries from 25% to 40% as retaliation for some recent tariffs that the United States had imposed. I can tell you I've talked to many cranberry farmers that have made efforts to create value-added products out of their cranberries, sweetened dried cranberries, cranberry jelly. If you come to Coos County, I don't know that I've seen it anywhere else in the state, but there's one producer that's creating 100% cranberry juice. I can tell you it's very tart. So if you like very tart juice, it's the juice for you. One of my children likes it, the other two won't touch it. But cranberries, even though we grow a lot of them, our farmers have a hard time meeting the $80,000 income test. So it's very expensive to grow cranberries, much like I'm sure it's expensive to grow all crops, but I hear from the cranberry farmers, and we don't grow a lot else in Coos County. So they have a hard time meeting the $80,000 income test in order to be able to build a house. So when our farmers start looking at, you know, how can I save some money and be able to keep my bogs, one of the things they look at is getting rid of that house in town and being able to have a house out on the property with their bogs. And if they can't meet the income test, unfortunately, in our planning department, we have to tell them, I'm sorry, you can't build a house on that property. And the $80,000 test is because it is, in fact, considered a high-value farm crop under the definition where it says berries. If cranberries were exempted from the definition of berries, then they would still have to meet a $40,000 test. It's not like there would be no criteria at all. They'd have to meet a $40,000 test in order to build a home on the property. But my planning director believes that most of our farmers would not have difficulty meeting that standard. I see it as a fairly simple, elegant solution to a problem that is very difficult for people when they come in. Anybody who's ever dealt with people at the planning department knows that people get very frustrated by small problems that they think should be fixable. This is one that we see as very fixable and a problem that would not open a large door. It's a local land use issue. Frankly, if other people want to start building growing cranberries, we would welcome them to do so. But it really is just a Coos and Curry County issue. And the point of this bill is to encourage some growth and sustainability for our cranberry farmers. We're trying to keep people growing cranberries and not get them out of the business.
Questions? Do you have any sense of where, from an acreage standpoint, the financial thresholds are? Like, is 80,000? I could tell you in pears, for example, about what 80,000 gross income would be for pears, but I have no idea if we're talking 40 acres, 10 acres, 20 acres, or where would 40,000 be?
Yeah, no, it's a tough question because it's so dependent on how that farmer is selling their berries. Mm-hmm. Ocean Spray has the A pool growers that have a guaranteed price and the B pool growers that have another price. And then there's the independent farmers that don't have a guaranteed price from anyone. And so they're just trying to sell them on the commodity market. And
And then there's variations among that, because if you dry pick your berries, then you can sell them as fresh berries. Like when you're in Safeway and you see the bags of fresh berries, those are all dry picked. So I can try to get an answer for you, but I don't have one off the top of my head.
We have anybody else testify? Oh, Farm Bureau. We'll all ask some other folks too.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, but Representative Helms.
Thank you. Hello, Commissioner. Nice to see you again.
Hi, Representative. Thank you.
I just want to make sure that I am sure that we're actually going to be able to conserve these farms. And so one of the, I'm looking at the letter from our folks at DLCD. I get the dropping it down part, which could allow an ancillary dwelling. And maintain the bogs. And I'm assuming, so part of my question is, these lands seem uniquely suited to cranberries and not many other crops, certainly no other high-value crops. And then the part that gives me a little bit of pause is the last sentence in the DLCD letter that says, in addition to permitting this kind of non-farm development, other non-farm uses could be constructed over cranberry farms, including golf courses, private parks, and landfills. If our purpose is to save the cranberry farmers and the cranberry bogs, I'm probably in. I'm worried about conversion away from agricultural uses altogether. And So maybe you can allay my fears there.
Yes, Chair Clem, Representative Helm. I have heard that comment about allowing other non-farm uses also. That was not anything we were trying to address with this. I suppose there's always unintended side effects, but we have spoken with Bandon Dunes Golf Course, which is the golf course that you may have heard of down in Coos County. I don't know, maybe somewhere. And they have told us that they have no interest in this bill. I think they're the big one. Landfills, well, we don't build landfills on the coast, so we're not concerned about that. And I'm sorry, private parks. And as to that one, we do not get a lot of requests for private parks on the coast either. You would think we would get more, but we don't, especially with all that lovely sun we have, right?
They're a unique animal, I think.
They are.
For sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Williams.
Representative Helm said better exactly what I was going to ask. So,
thank you.
Yeah, this is not meant to be an indication of my position on the bill, but I will tell you, when times are tough in agriculture, a lot of us get tempted to depart pieces of the property at least and build a house. And I went through this in 1999, the pear industry just tanked. And there were articles on the front page of the Oregonian saying, you know, Hood River Valley's going to turn into like a Vail or Aspen because there's good skiing, there's good windsurfing, and the pears, we were just losing money. I mean, we lost like 70 grand, I remember, 1 year, real dollars. Mm-hmm. You know, spent 500,000 to lose 70. And Harry and David came here one session. Not too long after that, the pears had recovered some, but they came here and they wanted us to change the land use system specifically just in one county so they could sell off land in order to get out of financial trouble. The problem was, in their case, they had somebody bought the company, a leveraged buyout, and then bonded against the company and ran it into the ground. And so we weren't interested in changing the land use system just to help them. And it turns out, in the end, they filed bankruptcy. They're still operating. They're still Harry and David. They were fine. In Hood River, we did cherries, and the pear prices rebounded. So we didn't switch our uses just because, you know, times got tough in a market.
Right.
Sometimes we switch crops, but we don't switch our uses. And so I think for me, if the only reason to do it is we think at least temporarily cranberries just – I need to hear what the minimum acreage is, too. It's very important, because if cranberries just temporarily can get to 40, but they used to get to 80, and then 2 years from now they can get to 80 again, and there's a somewhat proliferation. If you got 150 growers and now everyone has a farm dwelling who didn't have one anymore, that's not, I don't think, what our land use system, and I know you're on LCDC, so I know you think about these things, but that's not, you know, that's not what we're here to do. And we certainly aren't here to do things like, you know, switch uses to golf courses and private parks. And we can write amendments to preclude that. It's I'm just interested purely in the 40,000 versus 80,000.
Chair Clem, I think you raise an excellent point. And there's a couple of things there. One is that, so I used to be an attorney, I still am, I suppose, but when I was in practice, one of my clients was a cranberry grower. And this was 6 years ago, probably as many as 8 years ago when this first started, but there was a move afoot at that point to have a class action against Ocean Spray because of the pricing structure. And also because of the fact, and this probably won't be a shock to anyone, it was a shock to me at the time, but when you buy like cran raspberry juice, mm-hmm. that juice is mostly apple mm-hmm. when you look yeah. at it. It's because apple is a very palatable juice.
Or pear, a lot of pear filler, yes. turns out.
Yes, also. Yes. And so it's not really cranberry juice. The amount of cranberries used is very small, which is why, you know, they're able to use relatively small amounts of cranberries in order to make vast amounts of juice. So for that reason, you know, there's not that many cranberries being sold, and the cranberry growers were losing money at that time, 8 years ago. Since then, you know, if we fast forward, what's happened is now there's a lot of bogs down in South America. And those South American bogs are also depressing the market. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the other thing that we see is that these lands that they're using for cranberry bogs are not particularly well-suited to growing anything else. They're sandy. They have a lot of clay. We had a discussion back when there was a lot of sand down in Coos County, and the cranberry growers were explaining that their bogs actually grow really well with more sand. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of other crops that meet that criteria, so it creates a difficult situation for them to be able to grow another crop. So we don't have a lot of other options to offer them.
That's a good point. Representative Bossart Davis.
Thank you, Chair, and I think that you answered right at the end as far as you mentioned other crops mm-hmm. when there's problems. I know that not all farm ground can do that, and I think you answered that at the end, that you don't have a lot of other options. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the approach we're taking here, and the approach is if we're worried that a particular crop doesn't generate enough in value versus the soil type or something else. This method is a way to write a bill to get at the same thing. Right. Another way to describe the characteristics of the soil. Mm-hmm. But maybe you got to do both. Maybe you got to do, you know, high value and the soil types. Because there are other things that are probably high value that if price, or pears are definitely considered high value mm-hmm. until the market crashes, then they're not. And I'm worried about setting an avalanche of people coming here if we only go by the fact that cranberries used to be able to make that kind of money and now they can't. Mm-hmm. I don't want people coming here every time the crop prices get low on whatever and saying, hey, let's lower the threshold. Because I think when the standard was made, they thought about just doing minimum acreages, but it was hard to just do minimum acreages. And so then the pioneers of the land use system did value. And I think in some cases it might be both, actually. It might be minimum acreages and minimum value. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just a little bit concerned about the way this is constructed. I just don't want to. I don't want it to be based on just price of the crop. Representative Brocksmith.
Thank you, and I appreciate your concerns. My concerns, of course, then if we take it to soil types, then we're going to have an onslaught of other folks here in opposition to the bill because there's different soil types that are around the state that aren't exactly adhered to as well,
yeah.
Especially over in Eastern Oregon where you have high-valued farmland that isn't really high-valued farmland, right? I don't know how long the pear market, you know, was down or fell out, but
5-6 years.
The cranberry market's been pretty much for probably 15,
yeah.
close to 15 years. I mean, The problem now is, you have the co-op growers, and then you have the ones that are outside the co-op. The co-op growers, of course, are kind of strangled with the Ocean Spray issues, and you know, they're kind of stuck in that. But as the commissioner talked about, the South American market just floods the market. It's one of the reasons why, when we were hopeful to change the phytosanitary certifications with regards to shipping more over to China, they have access to the South American markets as well. And so it's really a need for to be able to diversify their land into a new crop. If it's not going to be cranberries, maybe it's cattle, maybe it's sheep, maybe it's forestry, maybe it's something else that that they can have on the land and be able to utilize it. The berry definition, it's, you know, there's nowhere near the price that you're going to get for marionberry, for blackberry, for raspberry, for blueberries, and there's blueberry farms all over the same area in with cranberries. Well, not particularly large ones by any means, but.
Well, I really appreciate your presentation and all of the uniquenesses of the area and of the growing that is done for cranberries. I must be one of your best customers, and I like tart juice. But and so I don't want these to go away. I want them to be just like everything else that we have here in Oregon. We have lots of berries, but I want cranberries too. Mm-hmm. So I really understand the market issues. But this bill, that doesn't bother me as much as the other uses.
Yeah.
The other uses on there, I mean, if this bill is to pass, in my mind, I can't have more one-offs, and I've already voted for one golf course in some place close to where you live. And it's a situation where I really feel like, you know, there are circumstances and there are crops and there are conditions and there are changes in what we can grow and what we can do. But there are so many new crops that we've been talking about, even in this committee like hemp, that nobody, you know, years ago would have thought it could possibly be the kind of market and also the kind of profit that there is right now. So I just want us to be careful and think about one-off, you know, types of bills, and I want us also to think of unintended consequences. And so I just hope that if this committee is going to work on some amendments or work on something that makes this more palatable to the land use system and to the idea that we want to have a wide variety and diversity of crops, and that we also want to make sure that we're not doing anything that is going to cause something not to be, that you can't undo it, that because of conditions that are changing or because of needs that we may have for land in the future, that we're not able to do something or use it as a resource. So, but thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
If you have any final comments you'd like to make, we'd certainly take them, and then Farm Bureau's going to testify after you are too, and maybe we'll even haul DLCD up here after that if we have further questions.
Thank you, Chair Clem. I do not have any further comments.
Great. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you.
Mary Ann Cooper.
Good afternoon, Chair Clem and members of the committee. For the record, Mary Ann Cooper here today on behalf of the Oregon Farm Bureau. I will start by saying that was a very interesting dialogue and gave me a lot to think about. But for Farm Bureau, we had Commissioner Cubbins and some of the farmers that are interested in this law change into our Coos Kerry County Farm Bureau meeting, I think this fall. And they definitely felt that there was a need and understood what they were trying to accomplish here. We've been assured that this is not about golf courses. And I feel confident that the committee and the legislators would, you know, if that proves false at a future date, would remedy that. So for us, I think we're comfortable with the bill moving forward. But I do think you've raised some interesting issues about the whole idea of high value being tied to specific commodities versus something that's more specific to the land, because it is interesting. And in this case, you know, I think there's but one of the things that we understood is that some folks do want to be able to convert away from cranberries. I think they have other hurdles in doing that, and I think there can be pasture and timber and other uses for the land. And I think we certainly don't want to have anything in the system that would incentivize either way somebody converting. I think people should grow what works for them and for their operations, and the moment that it works for them and their operations. And it is an intriguing issue to have high value tied to different commodities versus something specific to a characteristic of the land. So that's my own personal commentary, but for Farm Bureau, we did understand the need for the bill, talking about it locally, and are comfortable with it.
Any questions for Mary Ann? And the way the statute's designed is interesting. I hadn't really, I think, looked at this in a while, but it's basically saying, okay, high-value farmland, irrigated and classified prime, unique, class one or two,
non-irrigated, class prime unique one or two, and then outside of the Willamette Valley, tracts growing specified perennials demonstrated by some aerial photography, and then here's the list. So just picking a list like that is kind of weird too, honestly, because then you got to come here and just change the list based on what's making money and what isn't. And that is kind of strange. So,
Chair Clem, that's the one of the things that I thought about is I was like, are we incentivizing somebody to actually move out of cranberry production so that their income test is lower versus staying in cranberry? I don't know. I've not thought about that until you all start having the dialogue around it, but it is an interesting kind of dichotomy that the current law sets up. And I will say I've not been around long enough to have the history on why that happened.
So did your members, do you think they would be fine if we put in language that, I mean, I have to rewrite the whole statute at that point. That makes me nervous. But if you put in language that made it clear that a farm dwelling, this is not easy. Like, if you wanted to put sideboards on it to make sure that you couldn't do golf courses, private parks, and landfills, but the way you're doing it is taking and adding cranberries in the not including part of high value, I don't know that I could go down to LC and ask them to do that, and they wouldn't end up rewriting the whole entire high value thing, because you would have to somehow put just right next to cranberries, except, you know, they're not high value, but they also can't be these other things, like golf courses, private parks, and landfills. And there's probably other restrictions on high-value farmland, like your Measure 49 claim can't go on high-value farmland, I don't think, and a bunch of other things that can't go on high-value farmland. So just by taking out of the definition of high-value farmland, you're doing a lot more things, I think, than just changing the income test.
Chair Clem, I think that is probably correct. And I think the kind of interesting thing to me, though, is in the same vein, I certainly want people to grow what works for them for their financial and farm purposes, not for what else I can do on the property. And so I think it is an interesting conundrum that they're in, because I wouldn't want any of them to convert to pasture just so they could build a home.
Right.
If they're able to make a living in cranberries. So I will say I don't have an easy solution, and I think we're very willing to entertain whatever needs to happen to have the local folks have the relief that they need and not cause any unintended consequences.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Further questions for Marianne? Does anybody have questions for DLCD, who's here also? It's probably always odd when one of your commissioners is here. You probably can just stay right there. That's probably what you do.
Thank you.
Create an awkward tension. Okay. anybody else on this bill? Mr. Heineke, you're just going to sit back there and stare at us, aren't you? Just see what we're up to.
We're almost done with this.
As long as we're not terminating Measure 49, he seems okay. All right, then. Well, we're out early today, committee members. I will try and get us a little more items on our next few agendas to use your time wisely. Otherwise, go enjoy the sun, and I will see you all next week.
I don't have anything else to be doing besides...
No, nothing at all, it turns out. Great. Let me adjourn the committee.
We need to add...